Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
There is a word especially for you. When you think you're about to give up gas, just read your Bible. It'll tell you what to do. Be not weary. In doing well. For in due season, you're going to reap. Yeah. Say, be not weary.
Good morning. Welcome once again to our weekly internet program. I'm your host with my co-host on the line, Brother Daniel. I'm your host, Minister Joel Lewis, and you are listening to Free on the Inside. And you just heard a little musical interlude that said, do not worry. You know, and I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. Because if we look around this world, if we look around this society, if we look around the town that we live in, which is Dallas, Texas, there's a lot. There's a reason. Boy, I'm scared to death. That's, you know, that's calamity and mishap all around, but the word said, do not worry. You know, because we put our faith in God. This is what this program is all about. We talk about ministries, and we bring ministry to the forefront, and these ministries are making a difference. You know, our logo said, help change a life. You know, we can't do anything apart from God. It was about somebody that helped me. Brother Daniel helped me when I was down and out, and I helped Brother Daniel when he was down and out. So we'll help us one to another. But this morning, I again, thank you for listening to this program. Here, that call-in number that you too could be a part of the program. That number is 310-982-4126. Please take advantage of that number. Please write that number down in your address book. Again, that number is 310-982-4126. You know, our program goes around the world. Our program goes coast to coast. And so we ask you to listen to the program. Guess what? Our program is archived. So if you can't listen to it early in the morning, you can listen to it midday. If you can't listen to it midday, you can listen to it in the evening. But you have no reason not to listen to this program. We have a very large archive of past programs. And so please, please, please check them out and see what you too can do to help change a life. We have Brother Daniel on the line there. Good morning, Brother Daniel.
Good morning, Reverend Lewis. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm on fire for the Lord, brother. Well, you know, man, this has been a great number of years that we've been doing the program. You know, I was just sharing with you, it's been about 6 years, man. And each time I do the program, I'm always nervous and concerned. But yet, I'm not doing it for myself. I'm doing it unto God, man. That's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. I know you get real enthusiastic doing it. And, you know,
yes, sir, because
you have to have that vibe in order to do it, because, you know, a lot of times when you want to try to do something, a lot of obstacles come in your way, and things start happening, the machine stop working, and everything, you know, we had a lot of that stuff going on during this 6 years. You know, sometimes the guests wouldn't show up. You know, well, we just kept on keeping on,
Yes, we did. And you're our co-host, so you've been in it to win it. You know, you always been there when you could. Sometimes, you know, situations come up and you can't make it. Oh, I can't make it. But it happens that way, man. But we've been faithful, man. And that's what God is looking for, faithful men and women, brother.
Yeah, basically what we're trying to do, we're trying to bond together, just trying to bond together people and get them together and make them realize that we need to help each other. And basically, that's the main thing what Jesus told us. We need to learn how to bond with each other and love each other, no matter what faults we have or no matter what differences we have. We need to love each other. So that means you need to love this man that's on the street. You need to love this guy that's clothes raggedy. Love this guy that's on drugs, or learn this guy that's living on the street, don't have one where to her stay. We show him love and compassion. But at the same time, you got to show him that Jesus is a way for him to bring himself back in the fold. You know, it's just like lost sheep. You find him and you bring him back in. You know,
hey, man,
you might
want to,
just like what we're talking about right now, things start happening. Things start falling apart. Most of the time in ministries, when you go out and you want to try to do things and you want to try to go witness the people on the street, everything starts falling apart sometimes. You know, you might not have a speaker. You might not have a cord. You might have left a cord at home. You might have lost, you know. But it's all for the good, you know. You lose the bad for the good in order to make your purpose happen. You know, and the enemy, he going to do that anyway. You know what I'm saying? Because, number one, he don't want to see us do it. He don't want anything he can bring a hindrance to your mission, he'll do it. Pitfall. He'll send crazy people over, acting crazy. You know, I'll give you a good example, Reverend Lewis. You remember when we had that street ministry over there with Brother Raul?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I still go over there on the
Yeah, and everything was going all right. We had fed the people. But then again, the devil had to round his ugly head over there. And just basically, this guy just started acting crazy and wild. But at the same time, you used, and God told you exactly what it was. It wasn't nothing but the enemy. Basically, you came and calmed the guy down and calmed him down and calmed him down. And then he started seeing the light. But, like we say, it's the enemy. Yeah.
And you know, brother, as you said, that it's a comfort to know that you know, for the you know, the Bible said the warfare that we fighting not against flesh and blood, but against principalities. It's a good thing to know that, man. And, you know, I do jail ministry, brother, and I go down there and I tell these brothers, you know, you got to have your faith in God, man. You know, they got faith, but sometimes their faith is not in God. They believe God. They believe that there's a Jesus and there's a God, but they don't have that faith, man, that faith that surpasses understanding, man. You know, because they incarcerated, they separated, and so they have lost hope, man. But we that are restored, like yourself and myself and all the other people, man, that believe there is a God, and not only believe it, but also share our belief with other men and women and to strengthen their faith.
Amen. You know, like when you try to compromise with things, most of the time when you settle for something smaller or lesser, you're already going to suffer. So my God always has the best for me in everything what I do. In everything I do, I try to do my best, even though sometimes there'd be pitfalls coming the way and obstacles coming in the way. I still try to do my best in life, you know, in the ministry part of it. You know, and there's never going to be a complete day and a perfect day. There's no perfect day. There's never going to be any day that's real perfect for you, but you got to make the best of what you can do every day.
And that's so true. I remember
that. So Deacon Lewis, Reverend Lewis, I keep calling you Deacon Lewis, but you're a minister, a full-fledged minister today. Everybody should know that. You know, Reverend Lewis has been given his certificates and papers and being a full-fledged minister of the gospel.
Well, God bless you, now, Brother Dan. You know what?
I'd like to appreciate you for your achievement that you've done through the years, you know, with all the hard work and stuff that you had done. I'd like to give your condolences for you.
Thank you, now, my brother. But, you know, I'm a servant of the Most High King. You know, I wear many hats, but I have only one calling. And so, you know, I'm not bound by titles, but thank you for honoring that. You know, it's God that did it, and not.
You know, I remember when you were just little Jody, riding around in your 1965 Chevrolet. You know, we used to ride. Remember those nights we used to sit around and just talk about all the kind of things, what we wanted to be in life and what we wanted to do. We talk about all these different stars and stuff. We listen to Earth, Wind, and Fire. Oh man, yeah, that's another thing too. You know. I was reading today how Maurice White died.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah, he died. You know, Earth, Wind, and Fire, one of the premier music musicians of the music world. But you have to tell you that everybody has a turn, no matter what
it's
gonna be. We all have a time we gonna have to die and leave this earth. No matter how much money you got, how many riches you got, you still have to go and face God one day. So that means whatever you're doing in your human body, you got to make sure you're doing the right thing and you're not doing nothing offensive to people. You know, you're always leaving your mark. So when that day when you do leave and then that day people got you stretched out in this church, they can come up and be saying positive things about you, not just trying to make up things about you just because that man, I don't really know what to say about this man. You know,
know, and that's a sad thing, man. They live a whole life, you know, whatever number of years it is, and can't nobody say nothing good about you. They got to make
nobody
up.
Nobody really
man.
Don't know nothing good to say about
you. Know, so,
man.
You know, so how do you get to let people know about you? By just let them know that you serve a God, man. That's how they know you. They said,
yeah,
brother,
they
I don't
know
anything about
your,
you, but
your...
I could see the God that's in you.
Yeah, people can see God in you. They can see, even before you walk up to somebody, they'll come tell you, say, man, there's something about you, man. There's something about you, man, that sets you out from other people. It's just some kind of glow about you, you know, a glow that attracts you to, they used to call it charisma, but it's a little bit more than that. It's the God in you. You know, they got a song about that, too. It's the God in you. And if
yes.
you treat people and you living godly, you know, it attract like. You know, and they say another thing. They say like attract other likeness. You know, two negatives repel each other. Mm-hmm.
And that is
so
true. So
today
I want to
kind of talk about something that's happening around in this Dallas area today.
Okay, but before you go on, let me get out this number again because I want people to be able to call in. I want them to listen. Man, this is just two good friends having a conversation, but we invite other friends, other people like mine and like passion to join in on us. You know, you'll listen to Free on the Inside. Our calling number is 310-982-4126. We have Brother Daniel and myself. We're hosting this program each and every Saturday morning. God have blessed us to be able to do this, and we encourage you to come on and be a part of what we're doing. The phone line is available for you. We got a couple of calls on the line. They decided they just want to listen in, but that's great. That's great. So if you change your mind, just let us know and we'll bring you in. You too can join this conversation. We have another guest coming up at the 8:30 hour. But right now, me and Brother Daniel are just going to talk about some things that God laid on our heart concerning this first portion of our show. Okay, Brother Daniel, tell us what we got going on.
Well, basically, I like to talk about what's happening in the kind of like in the area and also in the world. We're having a little problem with a virus that's been, attacking people through mosquitoes. And basically
yes.
what I'm trying to say, we need to try to learn how to protect ourselves, you know. What you do, you don't go outside and let these mosquitoes bite you, and you use a repellent. You wear long sleeve shirts. You can also eat garlic. Garlic comes out of your skin, so that won't make them want to track yourself in order to bite you. And mostly the biggest threat is it biting pregnant women, you know. So when they bite the pregnant women, the virus gets inside their bodies and affects the babies. So basically, all viruses there are two or three types of viruses. Some viruses grow fast, and some viruses grow slow. They call it latent virus. And these viruses, like AIDS, they grow slow. Slow. And so basically, the effects are not overnight. Basically, sometimes it happens in 4 to 5 to 10 years before the effects of the virus affects the immunity system. And when these results happen, you see all sorts of physical ailments come up and illnesses and stuff like that. Basically, the science is basically they don't know. They can just go by what experiments they have put on people and compare and contrast between those patients that they have now. In fact, they had about 4 cases they had this week, and one of the cases said it was acquired through sexual contact. So that's another thing, in protecting yourself. Basically, God put us here in order for knowledge. He put us on this computer wave line in order to instruct people and to help people. So there's another way than just preaching and telling folks, about protecting their lives, because he gave you sense enough to order enough to understand that you have a choice. You know what I'm saying, Reverend Lewis?
Amen. Yes, you do.
Life is a choice between good and evil. most of the time, most people make choices, and they take a choice to do something. And they know it's wrong, but they still do it. So basically, if you're doing this and you can't control yourself, I'm not telling you to do it. Caution and protect yourself.
Yeah, we have to be wise, man. We got to be wise.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Like you say, you go around a lot to most of these jails, and you go to sometimes the street ministry, and when we used to go out, and sometimes you pass out condoms to the people.
I did that a long time ago.
Some people got offended between, they said, why would a church people or ministry people want to go out and give out? But then again, when you look at it, you say, well, why would you just give up and let this disease spread amongst people? You know what I'm saying? Why would you just go into battle without armor? You know?
Yeah.
It's a war. Yeah. It's a war against good and evil, a revolution, you know. And all, but what I'm trying to say, if people cannot control themselves, at least try to help protect them, live, and keep it from spreading. Because basically, what's going to happen? And I don't know whether it might be in you or my lifetime. The whole world is going to be, basically, it's going to be infected with all kinds of pathogens, ailments, pestilence. You know what I'm saying? That's in the scriptures, Revelation.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I know we can't avoid it. But right now, in my lifetime, I don't want to see it. And if I can pray to God in order to protect me from this, I want it to happen. I protect my kids. I got kids. I got grandkids. I don't want my bloodline or anybody else I know suffering.
And you know, Brother Danny, as you were saying that, you know, these things are going to happen because we live in a fallen world, man. But glory be to God, man, that he put things in place to protect us, not only during the science and the medical industry, but also with common sense, man. And a lot of times it's common sense. You know, God put some laws in order long before we're to this stage of life, you know, with the covenant that Israel made. He told them don't eat certain food and how to clean yourself and don't
touch certain animals, don't eat, and how to clean yourself up. That's hygiene.
That's hygiene, man. Those are hygiene tactics there. And so today,
and
we have to learn that.
And a lot of people say, man, that's the law, man. But it was common sense.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of that
and
stuff
the
Bible, it was just, come, why would you sit up and touch a dead body?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And then go and eat and so those things. So God put things in place, man. And so we have to be mindful. And you know, God is, he's in charge of everything. Sometimes these things that happen to get our attention and to draw us closer to God. You know, even Job fell on a calamity in his life, man. But it drew him closer to God. He was close to God, but it let him see. He said, hey, now I not only hear about you, but I see you. And I like, sometimes, you know, things happen that we know about God, but we have to see his hand at work in our lives, man. So I'm glad you brought that up, because when I was doing that at ministry, when I first started doing ministry, I was doing volunteer work, and we was going out to the shady part of town, and they was giving out condoms, and I prayed on these things, and I went on and done this because I was just in between jobs, and I was doing some volunteer work, and God had me to ask to talk to these people, say, hey, we giving you these things here until you come to a measure of understanding that this thing isn't right, but God, they going to leave you in that position without making a way of escape, Ricky. Those kind of was a way of escape. Those same things that we gave some people some time ago, they probably not use them no more. They probably got out of that situation. But Jesus, he fed people when they was hungry. He didn't say, well, I'm going to give you this here and I'm not going to feed you. He met them at their very need. He said, when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was a sinner, you showed me grace. So those things that happen, man, that's all come from God. That's the grace of God, man. You know?
Yeah, I'm
glad you brought that. Now, Brother Daniel, you have a passion for this for jail ministry, brother. You always posting things on the Facebook page, man. That stuff be right on time, man. It'd be very timely.
I be surfing. I be searching the web a lot, you know, Reverend Lewis, you know, and I be finding a whole lot of stories. They're talking about, in fact, this field that I'm going into is in HR, hospital, human relations.
Yeah.
And basically what they're teaching us is how you just look at the insurance rates and the supply and demand of insurance rates and the risk. That's another thing, Deacon Lewis. You know, a lot of people, when I was talking to a guy yesterday about most statistical or most insurance companies and most doctors and most people that in high position, they have a predict position in order to make decisions on outcomes of certain situations.
All right.
Basically, what they're saying, some things are going to happen anyway, so we might as well go and deal with it. You know what I'm saying? So what we're saying, like, if we got a certain number of people going to a country and they know a certain disease is down there, there's going to be a risk factor involved in it, but that we naturally have to accept. You know? There's nothing we can do about it because it's going to stand in the way of progress. They call it progress. You know what I'm saying? But most of the time,
right.
It's a monetary greed. It's a greed thing. It's like, yes, tomorrow it's a Super Bowl they're giving. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, there's that threat of something happening. It might be an earthquake. You know what I'm saying? It might be something mass pandemonium around that happening now, you know, but it's natural. They got to give it. They got, even though something might happen, you still got to go through with it, you know. And it's just, you know, for people to just realize, you know, man, you know, it's just a risk. And they got statistical studies that shows if certain things happen when something is done like this, if certain things happen to this. You know, and do you want to live your life as a statistic, a risk? You know, and it's just, you know, I just can't understand it. You know, I'm just praying that maybe I get some understanding, but I just don't when people's lives are involved in certain situations.
And that's the society we live in today, Ricky. You know, it don't make any sense. There's no rhyme or reason to it. But that's just the way things are. And sometimes if we dwell on those things, they kind of overtake us, man. But we have to know that God is greater than anything that we could ever face. You know, I do jail ministry. I share that, you know. But I'm saying that to say this, because as I'm in jail, these brothers say, man, they know that there is a God. And they know the power of God. But yet when they get out, and they're able to do what they would like to do. They're able to eat what they want to eat, and they can wear what they want to wear to a certain extent. And then they start forgetting about the power of God. They start forgetting about how God had kept them when they couldn't keep themselves. And so then they get a little lost in the system, and then they start listening to people that are saying that they are statistic, that you're going to be back in 6 months, you're going to be back in a year, you're going to be back in that lifestyle. Because there's a statistic that says that they're not going to get out of this situation. But
you're
the word says them that are restored ought to strengthen their brother. And I love this scripture that James 5:20 said, for let them know the errors of their ways, and you can save a soul from death and cover a multitude of sin. It didn't say you'll save you from a physical death, but a spiritual death. Save a soul from death, a soul from death, and cover a multitude of sin. I got to think of cover that multitude of sin. That's the past, present, and future, man. Multitude mean more than one. If I messed up in the past, I'm messing up in the present, and perhaps I may mess up in the future. But if God be for me, he can cover those things there.
That's basically what I've been saying all morning, Reverend Lewis. Basically what I've been saying all morning. He's covering us. He's covering us for our future generations. Plus he's covering us for now.
Yeah.
And protecting
exactly.
us. Yeah.
Exactly. And I, you know, and I just want to rephrase that, man. So I understand what you're saying, and what you're doing. You have some valid, points that you're bringing out, man. And so we have to be mindful of these things, and we have to realize that God ain't gonna let us keep going on the way we've been going on, man. And I hear
it can't last. It can't last long. You know what I'm saying? You know, I think today I read today in the, on the internet there was a Taiwan, I think, with an earthquake today, killed a lot of people, man.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, that, and you know, that's always something going on. You know, the Bible says you're gonna hear it's gonna be wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes in various places, and so we have to be mindful of these things. Well, you know that God is still in charge. I don't know why these things happen. You know, that was a tsunami back many years ago. You know, in one of the islands, and they wiped out a number of people, and then there was Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, man, and they wiped out a number of people. But look what happened after they wiped out. If some people were displaced, but yes, some people, God raised up and brought a ministry out of some things. I have a young lady that comes on the program from time to time. She wrote a book out of her tragedy, man, and that's awesome. Yeah. Man, if she would have stayed in New Orleans, would she be where she at today? You know, with the book and the different job. And yes, she struggles, and we all struggle. But yet, out of all those things, when all God was able to bless her to be a blessing to someone else. And the same thing with me and you. You know, we follow a difficult time. But in the midst of all that, God raises us up, man. For a family. You know, you done had been divorced and been, you know, married. He raised you up from one bad relationship to another. Jobs, from one job to another. All these things, you know, and God, he tears down and he builds up, Ricky.
Amen.
Hey, man, we have a guest coming up here in a few minutes, brother. You got a few other things you want to round out?
I want to give my shout out. I think I had another guest. I'm going to try to get him on next week. His name is, he's a saxophone player. He's one of the premier saxophone players in Dallas. And he owns a recording studio. No, he don't own it. He works at it, but he's a master record artist. His name is Jason Davis Sr.
And go right ahead.
He's an alumni from your high school, man. He's a Lincoln Tiger.
All right, God bless him.
Yeah, Lincoln Tiger. Yeah, but he plays saxophone, and basically what he does, he can. He can record you, and he can set up you up and for a fee now. He can set you up if you got any kind of recording project you want to do, or you got any ideas that you probably want to put on a disc, any kind of scriptural stuff you want to try to assemble. Yeah, you might have something you want to do, Reverend Lewis. You got anything you want to do with talking, you know, you're real good at rhetoric. You can talk real good, you know. You got any kind of poetry, any kind of, you know, writing you want to put on a disc, you know, to help people.
And he can do
you
that.
Ever thought
though.
Of that? You ever
thought
of that? You ever thought about writing a book?
No, I hadn't. I hadn't thought about any of those things. I ain't going to never say I won't ever do it,
but I hadn't ever thought about it. You should think about it. You know, this is my buddy. You're my buddy, man. I like to pass on ideas to people, man. Basically, that's what you do. You motivate each other. You push each other on. You don't cut down your bro. You push your fellow man up. You push your friends up. You force them. You push them and drive them to fuck too. To go on a higher level, at all times. At all times. It's like Ali used to say, I am the greatest of all times.
I
push yourself.
That, and you know, brother, I enjoy talking with you because, you know, you always have a insight on things that's going around us, and also for future events, you know, as you was talking about how we need to protect ourselves for the danger seen and unseen, and how you bring back our remembrance of how we was in our younger days here, brother. You know, Earth, Wind, and Fire with Maurice White, man. You know, I recall some songs that we would sit around, and I always thought about Earth, Wind, and Fire in the fall, man, during fair season, man. They'd be playing this music. You have your jacket on, and you know, it was some nice music to relax and to just meditate on, you know, and also lift your spirits, man. And so those kind of things there.
Yeah, man.
And you know, and you're a musician yourself, man. Though. So you know, you have a skill that you went to school for that, and along with other things. So you definitely have a song in you, and an album in you. So we pray everything goes well on that end. If you ever decide to put something together, get a trio, and you know, and produce an album. You know, it don't take much to do these things anymore. We were younger, you know.
Yeah,
he
used to cost a lot of money to do stuff like that, man. I knew one guy, he told me one time, he spent, man, close to $30,000 just trying to produce an album, not only trying to publish it, and you know what I'm saying? Now everything's got digitalized, it's less money, and you can basically do it in your home, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's so true.
Got now. Well, who's the guest for next? Now in the next couple of minutes, bro.
Oh yes, sir. We have a Randy. He's coming up. He's a family life coach, let me pull up his paperwork here. He's a prevention, abuse, neglect, and family violence coach and lecturer. And he's talking with family violence. He will be talking about family violence and youth violence. And also of young men that are in a violent situation, that's how to navigate and work through those things. And so he'll be coming up here short. I met Randy at a setting some time ago, and I was very impressed by what he was sharing with me and his take on it, and how he is saying that how men's, you know, we've been displaced because of our lifestyle. And so, but yet he's able to kind of navigate them and get them back in the balance. We have Brother Randy on the line right now, so we're going to bring him in. And so the next voice you'll hear will be our guest this morning, be Randy. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Welcome to the program. God bless you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great, great. I tell you what, dude, we're going to maximize this time here because you have so much to give us. But you know what? We pray this isn't your last time, that you kind of keep us up to date on what's going on in the lives of men and women and also families. So, Randy, introduce yourself and tell us about what God has put to your hands to do.
Well, my name is Randy Clark. I'm just a father here and a grandfather in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And one of the things that God has placed on my heart to do, let me just say it this way, about 10 years ago, I left corporate America after spending 30 years in corporate America and having a lot of success in that. But there was a void in that. I made a lot of money, did a lot of things, but at the end of the day, oftentimes I walked home and I said, did I do anything that mattered? And what God began to challenge me is to say, you need to invest your life in other people's lives so that when you're dead and gone, your life will still be bearing fruit. And so today what I'm doing is I'm investing my life in other men because I'm teaching four classes of father classes to men in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And it's been a blessing for me because what it does to me, it re-energized my life. I was going through a season in my life where I was just looking for something else to do, something that mattered and something of significance. And so God blessed me with this opportunity. And so it's been very rewarding for me.
Amen, amen. And you know what? As when you was talking offline, some of the challenges that men's facing in your setting are just like the same challenges I face in my own personal life. And men that are all over the country and over the city is facing the same challenges, but yet we're not alone. And that's a joy to have, that someone can say, hey, I know what you're up against, but these are some tools and these are some techniques to help you work through those things. Let's talk about some of those things that we're challenged with.
Well, you know, one of the things, Pastor, I found early on when I was still in corporate America, I had a young man come into my organization who was right out of college in his early 20s. And as I talked to this young man, he was struggling with some of the same things I was struggling with when I was his age. And what it was is an absent father. and he had some deep wounds in his life. And I saw how it was not only impacting his life, but impacting his relationships and his career and every aspect of his life. And what I did with that young man and about 10 of his friends is I pulled those men, young men together, and I began to pour my life into their life because I wanted to share out of my experience what I had gone through, too, because I didn't have my father in my life growing up, and I knew the wound they was experiencing. I knew the void. I knew the feeling of not being valued, a feeling of not having father to affirm you, not having someone to show you what really a good man and a role model of manhood looks like. And so I often tell men as I'm talking to them, one of the biggest struggles I see is I talk with men over throughout the country and even in the men I serve each week is we just don't know what that thing looks like. And because we haven't had a role model before us, we just don't know what it looks like. And so oftentimes men are frustrated because they're trying to do something that they don't know what it looks like. And so what we do in our program is we give these men not only a definition of what manhood looks like, we tell them the four roles of a man, a leader, a warrior, a servant, and a companion, and what that means, how that looks in a family. So these men have tools now in their toolbox to go out now and implement them in their homes, and now they're able to function at a home in a very positive way. Because a lot of us, I found, have a lot of things that we learn from the streets. And as I often tell the men I serve, I said, things that I learned from the streets because I didn't have my father in my life, it didn't work for the guys who taught me. It didn't work for me. And it's not going to work for the men coming along behind me because it's the majority of it. It just don't work. And so what I found is men who understand have to step up, fill a void in the life of these young men who are out there struggling because that, as you mentioned, is our future. That, as you mentioned, is our legacy. And if we don't get involved in these young men's life, then our children and our grandchildren, future generation, will have very few options to choose from because a lot of these guys will find themselves locked up or in the cemetery.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, Randy, you said something right there, because we have to invest in these in these other men's lives, because someone invested in us. I didn't get here overnight. I didn't get here by myself. Someone took time out, and they showed me some things. They taught me some skills. I share with the men, young and old, that the skills they learned as a young man are still just as important and still just as valuable as they done become an adult. But, you know, what skill did you learn, though? How not to do things right? You learned, a sinful skill or a sinful occupation? Or did you learn something good? And out of every situation, you could always learn something good. And I share with men, as you may know, that our young men, after they've been incarcerated, they've been separated from their family, and God bring them back into the life of their family, their girlfriends or their wife and their kid, that there's a learning curve, we'll put it that way.
Yeah,
that you can't go in there expecting to take over the finances, expecting to run the house. They want you to do those things, but you have been disconnected for a length of time that you just not been trusted anymore. And so how do you help men navigate through a situation like this? Like, I'm being disrespected. I'm a man, but yet they don't want to listen to me.
Well, you know, one of the things, a common thing that I find with men in general is that a lot of us have been trained since we were young boys that we're supposed to control our women, we're supposed to control our children, and many times that's where we get into a bad place because oftentimes in order to control somebody, you use force. And anytime you use force, that's abuse. And anytime you use abuse, that gets you in trouble with the law. That gets you in trouble with the system. And a lot of our men end up getting in trouble with the system because they have bad examples and ideologies about what a man is all about. What I talk to the men about in our program is it's important that you understand that one of the key roles of being a man is to be a leader. In order to be a leader, you've got to have a plan. And I often emphasize to the men, a woman will follow a man if she knows he's going somewhere that's worthy to be followed. And that's what we talk to them about, how important it is to have a plan. First of all, the plan starts with you. You have to know where you're trying to go as a man. And then you have to have a plan for your family. Where am I trying to lead my family? And once a woman sees that a man knows where he's going. He has a plan that includes not only himself but the entire family, how it's going to benefit her and the children, then she'll follow that, because that's what the majority of women are looking for. They're looking for a man who has his head on straight, a man who will commit to his family, a man who will serve his family, and a man who will love his family. As it relates to brothers coming out of incarceration, because a lot of them, the statistics said the majority of the men who are incarcerated didn't have a father in their lives. And so they went into those relationships with a deficit. And how I explain that to them, Pastor, is the mother and the father brings unique things to the parent-child relationship. And when a child grows up in an environment, and this is no offense to the women, to the moms, because without our moms, many of us would be in a bad, bad place. But the reality of it is fathers and mothers bring different things to the parent-child relationship. And when those boys grow up in an environment where they don't have a father in their home, there's some things in life that they don't have. And it's also like I explain it like this. It's like going through life with one hand behind your back. Yes, you can get some things done with what your mother taught you, but those things that your dad was supposed to give you, you don't have.
Yes.
And that's where a lot of men are struggling, because they're trying to give to their children out of a deficit in their own life. And that can't happen. So what we have to do, as you mentioned earlier, is that we have to now take another man and pull into that young man what he didn't get from his father to fill that void. And when those brothers come out of incarceration, like you said, they don't realize that their son, who was 2 when they left home, now 10 years or 15 years later, he's now a young man and a teenager, and you come back saying, boy, do this or boy, do that because I'm your daddy, and he's looking at you like, who? Where were you when my mom was struggling trying to put food on the table? Where were you when I needed clothes or shoes? Or where were you when I needed someone to teach me how to play sports or whatever the case may be? And now you're going to come back and mom, you don't have the right. I know that I'm your son biologically, but you don't have the right to tell me nothing. And that's where a lot of men make the mistake, because they think that by default that we're declared the leader. And the leader is not the fact of what your position is in the family. It's about the role that you carry. It's about not controlling the family. It's about influencing the family. When you're doing the right things as a father, then your wife and your children will follow you, because they'll deem you worthy to be followed. And that's one of the mistakes that a lot of these men make, because I often share with the men in my program that if you try to establish rules in a home without a relationship with the children and the people in the home, then you're going to get rebellion. And that's oftentimes what happens with these men when they come out of incarceration, is they come back without a relationship with those children, because they've been gone trying to establish some rules and change a system that mom has already put in place, and everybody in the family starts to reject that.
Yes, that is so. Now, Randy, just tell us now, based on your experience, how do men kind of get back in the line or fall back into the right relationship with their family? Because we tried, I tried this and that, and it didn't work. But what are some of the things that you have learned during your study and then your sharing with men, so some of the things that kind of help them navigate this difficult point in their life with their families?
One of the things I often share with the men is the fact of establishing a relationship with the children, whether they're your children biologically or they're your stepchildren, whatever. Establish a relationship with the child to understand and help that child understand that I'm here to support you. I'm here to encourage you. I'm here to help you to achieve whatever is the goals that you have in your life. I often share with the men, it's important as a father to have a plan for your child's life. That's one of the mistakes I see over and over again, whether it's in the church, in the community, just men and people in general. Oftentimes as parents, we don't take the time to develop a plan for our children's life. And because we don't develop a plan for our children's life, they don't often understand some of the things that we're trying to do. And so they just think dad is just being a jerk, or he's trying to be hard on me. But if you help that child understand, son, I'm teaching you work ethics so that when you have your own family, you'll know how to provide for them. So, yes, it may feel like that I'm asking you to do these chores around the house. I'm asking you to mow the lawn, or asking you to cut the grass or whatever, and you think that I'm being unfair to you. But, no, what I'm doing is building a work ethic so that as a man, that's going to be crucial that you understand hard work and how to provide for your family. Because a lot of guys today, all of a sudden, I see more and more men who think it's nothing wrong with them staying at home and their women taking care of them.
Randy,
I
wait,
have to admit,
I want to make a comment on that because, as you were sharing that, I have seen how society have been turned upside down because as we grew up and we struggle with things that we don't want our kids to struggle. We say, well,
yes,
I used
sir.
To do this. I don't want my kid to learn how to cut grass. I cut grass, but I'm going to hire somebody. I don't want my kid to learn how to do this. And then when the kid become an adult, the kid say, hey, I done never done these things at home. Now, I got my own family, and you asked me to take out trash? I didn't take out trash in my own house. I didn't cut my own grass. And so, you know, and I'm glad you said that, man, because we're raising up our young people in a society where they'll just say, well, I'm not going to do these things. We asked them to go get a job, but they never worked at the house. They had no responsibility at home. So now you're telling me to go out here and listen to somebody I don't even have that relationship with on the job, you know. I done been on a job with guys saying, you can't tell me what to do. Why not? You work
That's
for this
right.
man. You can't come out here
That's
and
right.
talk about, you can't tell me to go, you know, go stack these boxes or go over here and work for this guy. I'm not listening to you. Man, what you working?
You're right.
I love
you're
that.
Right.
I love what you're saying.
Yeah, a lot of times in our attempt as parents, and there's nothing wrong with that. We should, as parents, try to do everything we can within our abilities and our power to help prepare our children to go further in life than we did and to do better in life than we did. But also, at the same time, like you said, there is some age-old principles that we should not neglect in hard work and teaching our children self-discipline, hard work, respect. We call it in our program teaching our core values. You know, a lot of times we as parents don't realize that we have to create character in our children. And what that means is, like you said, well, if you don't teach your child to respect you at home, then when they go on their job, they're going to disrespect their boss, and guess what's going to happen? They're going to get fired real quick. They're going to go to the school, they're going to disrespect the teacher, and they're going to get sent home real quick. They're going to go out in the streets and disrespect the police, and the police are going to blow their brains out real quick. All of that comes from the fact that we didn't teach them some things at home, and so they go out into life with a deficit that ultimately is going to end up in their demise. And so,
you know, Randy,
it's some principle. Yes, sir.
You know, I was just thinking about what you were saying, but it's a great topic here, a great discussion. You know, when I was bringing my kids, and they had a discipline problem, I would go to school and I find out what's going on. They had some conflict at school, and I'd be sitting in the office or wherever, and other parents come in on fire. They mad.
Yeah.
They holler, you can't do my kid like this. I don't even do my kid like this at home.
Yeah.
And I wondered, if you would have corrected this at home, you wouldn't be here today.
You're exactly right.
Talking about the kid don't want to listen. The kid got a bad attitude. Parents come in, they don't want to listen. They got a bad attitude. So then you got to deal with the kid and the parent.
A lot of that comes from what I call, it's about discipleship. The main role of a parent is to disciple your children. And we talk about this whole word of discipline. But discipline, the root word of that is disciple, the same word of discipleship. And that's about teaching. And many times one of the things that we forget to do as a parent or fail to do as a parent is the fact that we don't teach our children what we expect of them. You know, when we grew up, there was this idea in our community then that, boy, when you leave this house and you go down that street, don't you forget who you are. That's how we were taught. And what that means, I've taught you some things. I've taught you how to treat people, how to respect people, and don't you embarrass me when you go out into the community. Well, today, a lot of parents don't even require their children to respect them at home, and so therefore they go out, and children may be at home disrespecting parents, and they're going to disrespect other adults in the streets as well. I mean, I spent a couple of years after I left corporate America doing some substitute teaching because I felt like, well, I didn't understand exactly what God wanted me to do as a way to give him back. So I said, well, it's a lot of kids in school, young boys that don't have their fathers. Maybe I can work in the school system. Well, man, one of the things I found as I went into the school system, I worked in several high schools, these kids come into this high school and they have a mindset that you can't tell me nothing. You can't tell, and they think they just as grown as all the adults. And I'm saying, like, wait a minute here. I can always tell within 1 or 2 minutes and talk, they had a 5 in the home, how they responded to me as a man. the children, like, for instance, if I said, no, you can't go, do this or that, if a child would turn and walk away and go on back to their desk, I could say, okay, that child has a father at home or their parents is requiring them to be respectful. And then those children who didn't, then they would say, why? You know, and they put their hands on their hip and what do you mean you can't, why I can't do that? And I knew then they didn't have a father at home. I knew then their parents wouldn't require them. Because the point of that is this. You should understand what the guidelines and the rules are in the school system. And when the parent says no, it should be just like it is at the home. The children need to understand that, well, sometimes I'm not going to necessarily give you an explanation. I think children ought to understand why we make the decision we make. But there's sometimes in a situation that I'm not open to debate and discussion and everything like you. And I think sometimes as a parent, we have to learn how to shut a conversation down. Johnny?
And that's so true. That's so true.
I'm just talking
well,
about
my parents used to tell me stuff. And they said, no, I don't ask them why. I don't debate. Mm-hmm. I might not like it, but they word was found. And Randy, you said some things there because as our young men and women are growing up, they are taking on the ways of the world, but yet they're not mentally prepared. I talk to young men that's in juvenile, and they said, well, I don't see myself ever getting out of this situation because my dad's is in jail, my granddad's been in jail, and I'm on my way. You know, so we all are doing it. It's a generational thing. And so
it's a generational curse.
Much of a challenge it is to kind of redirect their thoughts and their pattern and their lifestyle, you know, because it's a challenge.
It very is, you know, and what I tell guys, a lot of times people don't realize how powerful that generational curse is in your family. As an example, like you just mentioned, you know, for instance, I run into a lot of guys in my program who may be in the program because of domestic violence, as an example. And I tell them a lot of the things that we do in life is learned behavior. For instance, if every Friday my dad came home and he'd sit down in the sofa and in his big chair and he drank a 12 pack of beer and passed out, okay, right there, and he did it every Friday, then me growing up in that environment as a child, we think that's what men do. We think that that's what men do. They come home on Friday evening, get them a 12-pack, sit there in front of the television and pass out. You know, and we think
that's
okay,
right.
You know,
yeah.
Because it's learned behavior. Or if, for instance, if he would get, after he got drunk, he started fighting with mom. And then after a while, Johnny thinks that, well, that's how you treat your woman. You get drunk and you beat up on your women. That's a learned behavior. And so a lot of these boys that we're dealing with are kind of environment, and as a result of that, they have bad tools of how to deal with conflict and how to deal with relationships. Because the reality of it is, I don't care what kind of relationship you're in, you're going to have conflict. And if you've learned that's how I deal with it by fighting, if that's how I learn how to deal with it by getting drunk or smoking dope or whatever the escape pattern that you use to cope with that, then all of those things end up being destructive in a young man's life, and particularly in his family. And so what we have to do as men who know better is come alongside the young man and give him tools. I often tell the guys in my class, you know, you can take a screwdriver and drive a hammer, screwdriver and drive a nail into a wall, but a hammer is better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The more tools you
the
have
right
in
tool.
Your toolbox, right, you got to have the right tools, and parenting is no different than that. You know, when you're talking about being a parent, it's nothing. We as men in particular think that it's something in our DNA, that if just because I produce a child, that all of a sudden qualifies me to be an effective parent, and it doesn't. The same way we have to be trained on our job to do various things that we do, like I know you do things with working with computers and things like that. That's the training that you went through so that you can now take that training and teach it to other people. Well, parenting is no different. It's nothing in our DNA to say because I produce a child that I have the skills and the tools and the understanding I need to parent that child properly. And what we're talking about is being effective. Yes, you may be a parent, but how effective are you as a parent? Is that child growing up with wounds in their heart? Is that child being encouraged in their family so that they can achieve and be their best? Or is that child being beat down because of the issues that you have in your life because of maybe how somebody misparented you, and now all you're doing is passing that mess on from one generation to the other? What I challenge
the
men to do is say, listen, you may have had some mess passed on to you, but you have to at some point in time to say, I will not pass this mess on to my kids. I will stop. The buck stops with me. That was one decision I made in my own life. After my father was not there for me, I made a decision when I was a young man, even as a teenager, I would not allow my children to walk around in life with a hole in their heart and a wound in their heart like I had in mine. Like they had to me. So the only way I could change that, Pastor, is I have to be involved with my children's life. Each and every day of their life. And even now I have three adult children and I'm still involved in their life because of the fact that I want them to know that Daddy has been there for you. He will be there for you always.
Hey, Randy, we got a call on the line here. We're going to bring them in right quick, and then we're getting ready to wrap up this program. Man, this has been a great conversation. I really enjoy what I'm listening to and what we're discussing. Brother Daniel.
Hey, Reverend.
Yeah, we got a Randy on the line here. You'd like to make any comments regarding what are you talking about, family, parenting, and issues, and well, he's a
I need to talk to him. I need to talk to him.
Okay, yeah, he's on the line right now.
Yeah. How you doing, Randy?
Fine. How you doing, my brother?
You know, I can attest to you a lot about, you know, working around children in schools because I did it for 33 years. And I worked around all sorts of children from the South Dallas area, man. And I got to see every kind of lifestyle and every kind of person, every kind of parent, you know, the known, you know, around this area that came up to the school in order to, you know, in order to try to raise these kids. And basically what you said, they think nobody can tell them nothing right out. They think
that's
they
right.
know everything. And basically what you have to do is basically you have to break them down and just tell them that, you know, somebody somewhere really loves you. Really,
that's right.
the problem. They don't believe anybody loves them. You know, they don't see any love from these neighborhoods that they come from. You know, they're living in the projects where they see sex and drugs and all kinds of violence going on every day on the weekend, and then they bring it to the school that Monday morning.
Right.